morning.
Good morning.
My name is Tanya Rose, and I represent the appellants in this case. I'm assuming that you have read the briefing and are familiar with the case. If I could just review very briefly the arguments. I am here to ask this court to order the district court either to demand that the agencies at issue, that is the NSA and the CIA, either write more explicit affidavits regarding the issues or order in-camera review. It's not lost on me that at least one of you, and I think others of you, have been involved in many cases involving challenges to entries of summary judgment against plaintiffs on issues involving national security and FOIA exemptions being interposed by agencies, particularly the CIA and the NSA. I'm also familiar with this court's jurisprudence, which generally holds that you will give great deference to the agency's declarations. I understand that. I respect that, as I must. I also would just like to underscore that the legislative history of the Freedom of Information Act makes clear that the judicial branch does in fact have a role in reviewing Freedom of Information Act cases, including cases that involve interpositions of national security exemptions, withholding of documents on that basis. I think that it is well within the purview of this court to order in this case that Mr. McNair and Mr. Giles, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, be a little more explicit with respect to each of their affidavits and the reason that they have decided to withhold the documents. I think to do so, this court doesn't run the risk of overriding necessarily national security problems or inserting itself in a way that it doesn't have the authority to do. There are still many ways in which the national security can be protected, and I'm not even taking the position necessarily that the documents would therefore be obtainable under the Freedom of Information Act. It just seems that there's a pattern that's been going on now for many, many years in which the Mr. Giles and Mr. McNair are making declarations that have almost the same language. Indeed, Mr. Waldman pointed out in his brief that this court has upheld the validity of an affidavit, and I don't remember, frankly, whether it was from Mr. Giles or Mr. McNair, that contained almost the exact same language. I think it was in the...
What's wrong with the exact same language?
Well, that's a fair question. I think that... Right. The Mr. Giles or Mr. McNair may need to show that or may need to feel that he has to tailor the language in order to make sure that he is complying with issues of his job of protecting national security. But at some point, the juggernaut has to be broken. So at least somebody...
What juggernaut has to be broken? I mean, that's a cute phrase, but it doesn't mean anything.
I didn't mean to be cute, actually. I'm actually trying to be very serious about this. It seems that there are documents. In this case, for example, the issue of what happened in Guatemala in the 70s and 80s is seemingly, in my opinion, indisputably now a matter of public interest. There was an Intelligence Oversight Board. There's lots of interest now in Guatemala. It seems that now, 25, 30 years later, somebody can, it makes sense for another set of eyes to look at the documents and say, oh, right, this makes sense, I see.
If we're dealing with sources and methods, mm-hmm. If you have human intelligence that comes from someone who was endangered, if their identity is known, mm-hmm. Do we want current possible sources of human intelligence to know that we may release information which could disclose them in 25 years? They may be planning on living 25 years or more, and they might like to keep on doing so.
Yes, and I understand that that's the assertion. I would hope it goes without saying that I wouldn't want anybody's life to be in peril because of that. And but it seems to me that the environment has now changed. It seems to me that even the government...
Is it an environment now where they can die?
Pardon?
It's an environment now where it's all right for them to die and for us to let possible future sources of human intelligence know they could die in 25 years?
No, but I think the context, and I think it may be relevant for the court to view, the lower court even to view the context, that the government of Guatemala has made clear they're releasing all documents relating to what that were found in the subterranean archive that I pointed out in the judicial notice, that the government of Guatemala, the new president has said he plans to release all documents regarding what was going on during that time period. It seems to me then if the documents are going to be released, it would go a long way in instilling confidence, inspiring confidence in the American people that they are going to get information that may be relevant to what their government was doing. With regard to the sources being placed in jeopardy, it seems to me, with all due respect, or at least I don't understand how that works, why necessarily maybe the release of not the names of them, but the information itself necessarily means that their lives are placed at risk. I just don't understand it, and it seems to me that...
Apparently you don't, counsel. But it's important that the intelligence agencies in this court do understand that. When you release information that came from a confidential source, you have very often drawn a path towards your source. If you have fact A and you don't have fact B, the party out there that knows facts A and B know who knew A but not B. Anytime you're releasing information obtained from human sources, you run the danger of creating a line to the source. Now, that doesn't mean that all such information is protected, but it does mean that an awful lot of it is. Sources and methods are the lifeblood of intelligence, and you apparently don't understand that when it comes from humans, those humans have to be protected, or you don't get it from the next generation of potential human sources.
I'm not attempting to take the position that I'm in some... have more authority or knowledge about how intelligence works. That goes without saying. I'm merely a civil rights lawyer. My point is, though, that it makes sense that a district court at least look itself and see whether, and particularly in a case like this, where the document, at least with regard to four of the five plaintiffs, appellants, the document production is at issue, the documents at issue are not that voluminous. Why can't a district court take it upon itself to hold an in-camera review and say, all right, this information, explain to me how person A or person B, whatever, would be at risk for this, or why down the road that's going to happen? I just think that this court has a mandate, the district court has a mandate under the legislative history, which asks...
Statute doesn't require that kind of review in every case, right?
The statute, the revised statute calling for de novo review certainly means to me de novo. It certainly means to me that they're required to take a fresh look. And all of us, and I'm sure ad nauseum, you've heard the substantial weight given to agency declarations. And I understand that. I totally do. And it may be the case that in 100% of the instances, the declarants are absolutely correct. Nobody wants to see people's lives placed in danger. Nobody wants to see the security of the United States being diminished. I just call for the invocation of the power of this branch and of the judicial branch to take a second look, to have another fresh set of eyes. That's all I am seeking in this case.
What's the standard for when a district court should be ordered to conduct in-camera review, in your opinion?
Well, I understand that at least with respect to and recent jurisprudence of this court indicates that this judge reviews for an abuse of discretion whether a district court should have ordered in-camera review. And I understand that that's a high standard. I still urge this court to make sure an agency, the administrative branch, is doing what it's supposed to do by inserting itself a little bit in the process after all these years when the declarations seem to say the same thing, and just saying and just urging either a more explicit affidavit or, better yet, in-camera review. There's no reason to not have in-camera review, and in my humble opinion, the jurisprudence of this court does not hold that it's that it's discouraged to have in-camera review. It just holds that it doesn't necessarily need to. And I'm just urging that perhaps this court change course, in particular, at least in this case, when there's been a tremendous amount of interest in Guatemala, imminent releases of millions of pages of documents from Guatemala, that this court show that the United States of America is willing to disclose what it's supposed to disclose, unless, in fact, we are absolutely sure that it will have a bearing on issues of national security. I just want to say one other.
Unless we're absolutely sure that it will have a bearing on issues.
Well, I guess that's a high standard, but at least another.
I'm not sure where that standard came from.
No, so strike that. That was my own bad language. Okay. Strike it to the fact that it's like 5:30 in the morning for me, maybe 6:30 in California. There's another set of eyes. It seems to me, after having actually read the legislative history of the FOIA, that there was, and the subsequent history that was amended, it seems to me that there was supposed to be a role for the courts. It seems to me that there was tremendous frustration with how the APA had been administered and treated in holding so many secrets, and that the Congress really wanted this court, the judicial branch, to get involved.
Counsel, it isn't that we don't enforce the FOIA. If you have, as you say, read the precedents of this court on FOIA, we have ordered thousands of releases under FOIA. But FOIA has within it exemptions. And this looks a lot like precisely the material that the exemption was set forth to protect, doesn't it? Why doesn't the exemption in the statute cover the material here?
It may cover the material here, but it seems to me that, in my humble opinion, the affidavits are pretty vague, and if there were another set of eyes looking in camera to see whether the documents in fact raise a risk of national security with explication, in fact,
is that even required for the Exemption 3 issue?
Not necessarily required for the Exemption 3 issue, but the legislative history, at least with regard to FOIA itself, with regard to that issue, it just says whether another statute bars it. And I understand that the NSA provisions that were interposed by both Mr. McNair and Giles here talk about the NSA exemptions, and that if the issues relate to national security, but we don't. It that doesn't necessarily eviscerate the need or the right for the court to look at what the documents say and what they are. I mean, at this point, it appears that if there's an Exemption 3 interposed by an agency, by the NSA or the CIA, based on the NSA, the language about national security, there's effectively no judicial review. And it doesn't seem to me that was the intent of Congress, at least with respect to the FOIA. So I want to save a couple of minutes for rebuttal, but I would just like to say, with respect to the Holden Reed issue, the last issue with regard to the prior 1995 documents not being produced, I would urge this court to ask the lower court to use a more liberal pleading standard and include those earlier documents to have been part of the request, and order that the agencies deal with them. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Hear from respondent. Appellee.
May it please the court, my name is Joshua Waldman. I'm here from the Department of Justice representing the appellee. I think it's important to emphasize at the outset that what we're dealing with here is really core material within Exemptions 1 and 3, human sources and methods, and signals intelligence. This is exactly the kind of materials that falls within the very heart of Exemption 1 and the various statutes under Exemption 3. The plaintiffs, one of their main arguments is that these materials ought to be reviewed in camera, but this court has made it clear in Ray and other cases that's not the preferred method. In fact, Ray specifically said you don't just do it because what's the harm in looking at it? You need to have a specific reason, and plaintiffs have come forward with no persuasive reason here why the district court was required to have in-camera review. And of course, the burden here is to show an abuse of discretion on appeal, which they haven't shown. There's also mention that the declarations explaining exemptions 1 and 3 that were offered by the NSA and the CIA are vague, but these are exactly the kinds of declarations upheld by this court in cases like Students Against Genocide and Wolf. So there's really no basis on which to distinguish the declarations upheld by the district court here from the ones previously upheld by this circuit. With respect, plaintiff's argument about these, these are just boilerplate declarations. They repeat the same thing. With respect, that's simply because the harm that's going to result from disclosing these kinds of core classified materials is going to be the same in every instance. There's going to be the harm to the human sources themselves, threats to them or their family, and there's no need to reinvent the wheel with these types of declarations in each and every case. And other than that, I think my briefs, our brief sufficiently explains our points on this issue, so.
Do we need to hit both exemptions to resolve this case?
No, you could decide it either on Exemption 1 or Exemption 3. They're independent from one another. And as Your Honor pointed out, if you were to hold on Exemption 3, you don't even have to get into the question of harm to potential harm to the national security because it's not relevant for Exemption 3. And if there are any further questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Okay.
Thank you, and I ask this court to affirm.
You need rebuttal, counsel?
No, I don't.
Okay, thank you, counsel. Case is submitted. Call.